Okay, everyone. Welcome, welcome back. And here we are, round four. We're going to complete Be'ezras Hashem, the Dvar Malchus, this incredible teaching we're learning over here, called this episode one of Key to Redemption in Our Hands. So in yesterday's class, we left off the powerful idea how the exile and redemption are not two separate things. When we crack open the true energies that are causing the exile, and we draw them down and facilitate them into the proper vessels, then we take the darkness itself, which was never meant to be darkness, and transform it into light, because that's its true essence. And we learned that also has an impact on Mashiach himself, that we ought not to see Mashiach as a human being who is going to be born at the time of the redemption that needs to like come in to the world to change everything. That's not Mashiach. Mashiach is someone who is with the Jewish people. He's the leader of the Jewish people. He's with them in the exile. He suffers the pain of exile with Israel, with the Jewish people. And a classic and an example of that, he said, was Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the author of the Mishnah. And he was in the exile with the Jewish people, the leader Jewish people, and he's considered a leper because he's suffering their pains. But really, the inner element of that leprosy is the oneg, because he is really containing, he's bottled up in his soul, is the infinite pleasure that needs to be released into the world, but in its state of pregnancy is in a state of nega. That's what we learned till now. So all of this is going to lead us now into chapter 9. We have 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, so we have a lot to learn, but let's move this quickly. So now the Rebbe says this is also connected. He said right in the beginning of the discourse that we have to find Mashiach in everything we do on this Shabbos, Tazria Metzora, which includes the Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of the Fathers. That year, the Shabbos that Tazria Metzora came out, chapter number 3 in Ethics of the Fathers. No, I'm sorry, chapter number 2. Same like, no, the truth is the same like this year, chapter number 2. So it actually fits. Chapter number 2 in actually it's the same setting like this year. Then it was a leap year, so it was Parsha Shmini. Not a leap year, but it was Parsha Shmini. The setting wasn't exactly the same like this year, but Tazria Metzora was in the Chodesh Iyar. Okay, but in any case, the second chapter of Pirkei Avos begins with the teaching of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the same Rebbe that we spoke about earlier, the author of the Mishnah. And the opening teaching is as follows. Rabbi Omer, Rebbe says, Ezuhu derech yeshara, what is the proper way? What is the direct path, the correct way? Sheyiv lo ya'adam, that a person should select for himself. And what's the right path of life that a person should select for himself? So Rebbe gives advice. Whatever is beautiful, whatever has splendor for the doer, with tferes lemina adam, and will also be beautiful in the eyes of people. That means don't be extreme, don't be wild, even though you're looking to make the best for yourself spiritually. Find a middle path, find something that is going to be beneficial for you spiritually. You're going to live a good life, but at the same time, you know, consider people around you. Don't be an outcast. Consider the people around you. Obviously, this is talking a case where the people around you are decent people, and it's a normal world. So then, if you're living amongst, when Abraham, for instance, Avraham Avinu was living amongst the people in his time, he couldn't necessarily live in a way that everybody should. The truth is, he did. He figured it out. He was actually beloved by everybody, even though he was beloved to God. He figured out that his ways should be pleasing to mankind. So I guess you can always do so. Don't always have to make everybody approve of you, of your ideas, but at the same time, have a path that is a Yiddish to gut and to light, that is to God approving and to people. That's the simple meaning. The Rebbe asks some really, really good questions on this Mishnah. Beginning with the question as follows, three questions he asks. What does it mean? What is the right way that a person should the right pathway that a person should select for himself? The path of Torah and mitzvot. That's the path. The Torah mitzvah is called a path. Not only is it called a path, it's actually called Yesharim Darkei Hashem. There is a verse in Hosea in which it says that the ways of God are Yesharim, are straight, that they're a straight, righteous path. So if you're asking, what do you mean, what's the path? Follow the dictates of the Torah, the instructions of Torah, and you're on the right path. It seems like, you know, it's not enough that we have the whole Torah. Now Rebbe is coming to give you something new. What other path is there other than the path of Torah? The next question he asks is, what does it mean that the emphasis is that the person should select? But when it says person, it uses the term Adam, which we had discussed already earlier in the talk of yesterday or the few classes, especially the first one, that Adam is the highest level that a man can be called with. There's various different names for the human species, and Adam is the highest. What's the emphasis over here that when Rebbe is saying for a person to select a path, we're talking about an Adam? Question number three, the connection to the one who is saying it. Rebbe, what does this say? Why was it Rebbe? First of all, in general, why was it Rebbe that gave this teaching? Because the teachings are always connected to the people in terms of, because of who they are, that's why they gave that teaching. So there's always a connection. If you look into their lives, you understand their nature of their soul, the nature of their being. We can always draw lines and connect why from all people they're the one who taught this teaching. So number one, why is this Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Yehuda the Prince? Why was he the one who taught this teaching? And more so, we find him that he's referred to in the Talmud with various different names, including in the next Mishnah of Ethics of the Fathers, chapter 2 of Ethics of the Fathers, Mishnah 2. Over there, Rebbe is mentioned again, but he's not mentioned with the name Rebbe, which generally means the teacher, but rather he's referred to as Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Yehuda the Prince. How come in this Mishnah we refer to him as Rebbe, not as Rabbeinu HaKadosh, not as the Holy Teacher, not as Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Yehuda the Prince? Why refer to him as Rebbe? And the answer to this is actually a phenomenal, phenomenal light that the Rebbe sees in this teaching. And the Rebbe says the reason we refer to him over here as Rebbe, because we're talking about this instruction. Hear this unbelievable insight. I mean, obviously this is not the simple meaning of the Mishnah, but this is cracking open the Mishnah on a very, very deep level. The Rebbe is saying that this is the instruction of Mashiach himself. And since Mashiach is the teacher of the entire world, and primarily the teacher of the Jewish people, and via them, the teacher of the entire world, we refer to him as Rebbe. And we said, and remember, we said about Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, that in his generation, he was the worthy one to be Mashiach. So when Rebbe is talking and asking this question, this is the most important question. And this is primarily pertinent to our generation. This is Mashiach Tzidkenu, Mashiach, the righteous Redeemer, having a conversation with the people in the generation right before the redemption. And he's discussing with them and he says to them, you're wondering and you want to know what is it that you can do to bring about the revelation of Mashiach now, because you're living in a time when there's nothing else to fix anymore. The world has already been repaired. Everything has already been fixed. If everything through the work of the earlier generations. And that's the reason why Rebbe refers to the person who's in a dilemma, doesn't know which way to choose. He refers to him as Adam. Adam meaning the perfect human. So individually, you can say a certain tzaddik, he's a level of Adam. This is a righteous man. He's called Adam. He's compared to the one above. But over here, we're not talking about a particular person. We're talking about the entire generation as a whole. All of us together making one human being, but we're on a very high level already. Accumulation of thousands of years of tests and trials and tribulations, self-sacrifice, devotion to God, mitzvah observance, Torah study, all of that has led us to the peaks of perfection. And the Rebbe says that if we have flaws in our generation, they're very external and very superficial and very minor. There's nothing big anymore. So we're already in the state of Adam. Now Mashiach told us, the leader of the generation, who is the Mashiach in the generation, told us that the job is done, there's nothing to fix. But he says it's your job I'm not going to do it. You guys need to do it. You need to bring about the conclusion of the, all the work of Israel and all the work of the entire world, the purpose of creation, and bring the Geula. And you're all running around in circles saying, I don't know what to do. What in the world are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to do this? So now Rebbe says, that's what Rebbe, who is Mashiach, who was also in a state that he was a leper. Leprosy means that you finished all the work. There's only one problem what's making him a leper. And that is that you got this intense light, this enormous, enormous blessings, this enormous, incredible, godly light, because you finished all your work. You've stimulated a storm above, unbelievable. You want to make sure that that storm is going to come down, not as a destructive storm, but as a storm of light and blessings like the world has never had. So you want to be able to draw these transcendental blessings. You want to take this leprosy and you want to channel it down into containers and into vessels. So Rebbe is saying, what's the best way to do that? That's the million-dollar question over here. How do we do the final act? And to a certain degree, we have to say we still haven't figured it out because we're still sitting in exile now. We still haven't seen the redemption. Mashiach has not yet been revealed to our eyes, and the world is in a way that revealed to everybody what's going on. Something needs to be done. Seems like something is stuck, but what is it that we need to do in order to break through? Yeah. And beautiful to man. So what does that mean? So we learned already earlier. If you remember earlier, we learned that there is chesed and there's the gevur, there's dynamics, two powerful dynamics. There is the yearning, the suction, the elevation, the thirst, the desire, the fire in a person's soul, in which a person is seeking to break out of the constrictions of their own body and limitations and melt into the infinite. That's the fire. That's the upward energy. That's called gevura. There's another energy, which is chesed, which is flowing into vessels. Two different types of energies. How do you bridge them together? Which is exactly the dilemma now. You got this powerful Mashiach energy that's teasing you. You know it's just outside, but you want to bring it down. So how do you do that? You need the power of synthesis. You need the power that can synthesize the energy with the vessels. And which power is the power to unify, to synthesize, to bring opposites together, fire and water together? That's the Feres. That's beauty. The power of beauty is a synthesis. Is what blends and unifies. That's what something beautiful is—a combination of various different colors coming together to create a harmony. Teferis is harmony. Torah is called Teferis. The sages say when it says to you, God is the greatness and the strength, and Teferis, which is beauty, splendor. The sages say that on the word Teferis, Teferis is referring to the giving of the Torah. That was the beautiful moment. That's when God revealed himself in all of his splendor and all of his beauty. So the Torah is called beauty because the Torah is the synthesizer. Torah unifies. Torah harmonizes. So therefore, Rabbi is saying, choose the method of Torah. In other words, in order to bring about the final, there are many different things. You can maybe get it done other ways. But the right way, what it's calling for at this moment, this is what Mashiach tells his followers at the end of exile. He gives them instructions and he says, listen here, I'm with you in this. I'm suffering this pain. We got to get out of here quickly. What is the right way to do it? Choose the way of Teferis. Use the method of Torah. Soon we'll understand a little better what kind of Torah study. But use the method of Torah. And what is Torah going to do? Torah is the ability to capture the transcendental energies, which are really the energies of Mashiach, but down here they're causing exile. We spoke about earlier. I'm not going to repeat them. Listen to the earlier classes for that. And then it enables us to have the right vessels and containers to be able to bring down, in the words of the Kabbalists, the lights of Tohu into the vessels of Tikkun, the lights of chaos into the vessels of rectification. And with that, we have redemption. Why is it primarily through Torah that this will happen, and particularly regarding to the chaotic lights of Mashiach. So the Rebbe adds another powerful idea. He says we know about Mashiach that Mashiach has two roles. His relationship with the world, his relationship with the people, is on two levels. He's a king and he's also a teacher. He's a king. Mashiach is a monarch. He's a ruler. We refer to him as Melech HaMashiach. Rambam says there will rise a king. Fundamental to the belief of Mashiach is the restoration of Malchus Beis David, the Davidic monarchy, the kingdom. Mashiach is also a sage. He's a teacher. He's the ultimate teacher. And he will teach the entire world Torah. Rambam says that as well. What's the difference between a teacher and a king? A king rules from above. He dictates, and everybody obeys his commandments. With a king, you're not trying to understand him. It's not about understanding, it's about obedience. So the king rules from above. A teacher instructs and guides and elevates. The teacher connects through learning and study, which means the teacher is not dictating at you. You don't need a submission to a teacher. You need to connect to your teacher and bond with the teacher. So in a teacher student, even though the teacher is much higher than the student, but their relationship is one of closeness. King and subjects, the relationship is one of distance. There has to be fear, awe, and respect, and the teacher is and the king is above all the people. And therefore, a king is not allowed to do anything which makes him look like a common person. He has to be completely above the law that we're learning right now, the laws of kings and Maimonides in Rambam. The king has a loftiness. He's above it all. The teacher is more eye to eye with the students. He's more closer to them. Why does Mashiach have these two characteristics? Because in essence, Mashiach is bringing to the world godly light that is chaotic. It's infinite light. The world can't handle it. In that sense, those lights are above creation. Those lights, in order for us, for Mashiach to connect us to those, we don't have the vessels to take it in. So for that, Mashiach dictates from above and we just surrender. Through that, he's connecting us to the highest, 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 highest powers. When Mashiach is a teacher, that's Mashiach coming down, 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 much, much lower, and feeding us, nurturing us in a way where our vessels could contain it. So these are adapted to our vessels, modified to our vessels, and here you have energies that are bigger than our vessels. But here's the thing: these are not supposed to be two separate modules or two separate tracks. And the simple, it's two separate tracks. You have Mashiach wearing this hat, the hat of a teacher, and Mashiach wearing the crown of a ruler. Two separate, he's cloaking himself in the cloak of the sage, and here he's wearing, he's coming from above with all the power. Two separate things. The Rebbe says, no. The point of it is that they should converge, that the king should become your teacher. What does that mean? That even those higher, incredible, powerful, exalted, inconceivable, incomprehensible lights of the infinite, which really we can only connect to usually through submitting to it, yet we should do the impossible. Even that should become teachable. Even that should descend down into our vessels. And that's unifying the two dynamics of Mashiach. Mashiach, the king, should become Mashiach, the teacher. The very same person who's the king is also the teacher. Not just, and we say the same person, I mean, his very kingship is then taught. Obviously, it starts always off with kingship, but then those very energies are later channeled in a way without weakening, without losing them. But Mashiach has this way of opening us up wider and wider and wider and wider to receive and receive and receive. In other words, the limited vessel should receive the infinite light. That's the reason why we have to do it through Torah. Because Torah, as we said earlier, is the synthesis to be able to unify opposites. It unifies the kingship of Mashiach, the royalty, the transcendence of Mashiach, with the imminence of Mashiach, and the two of them unifying together. That's the power of Teferis. Now, in chapter 10, the Rebbe continues. This is an amazing lesson, but soon we're going to get to chapter, soon we're going to see a little further, and the Rebbe is going to clarify this. It's not just through learning Torah, but a specific type of Torah, as we're going to see soon. But first, this idea, he first connects it to something else as well. Again, he shows us this idea in every angle of that day in which the Rebbe was speaking. He's connecting it from every angle. It's that same lesson. That's what's so crazy. It's mind-blowing. Every aspect, he finds the same energy, the same idea. We are right now entering into the month of Iyar. This is right now, here in L.A., it's the last hours of the month of Iyar. So the truth is, to a certain degree, the whole day is still Nisan, because it's going to be Rosh Chodesh Iyar, but still Nisan. In any case, because the first day of Rosh Chodesh is really the 30th day of Nisan. It's complicated, I'm not going to get into it right now. But in any case, we're entering the second month of the Jewish calendar. The second month of the Jewish calendar is called Iyar. So the Rebbe was speaking, was on the sixth day of the month of Iyar. It was already in the month of Iyar. So the Rebbe says like this. It's the second month. And in the Torah, this month, Iyar is called the second month. Why? Because Nisan is considered the first month. What is the significance of first and second in terms of time? He says first month, which is the quality of the month of Nisan, is the month of divine revelation. And particularly, it's the month of the going out of Egypt, which means God is coming down to us with all of his potency and all of his power in order to break us free of all bondage and all limitation. Which means God is treating us to the transcendental infinite lights that are not limited in anything. The only way our souls can break free from limitation and constriction is by being exposed to an energy that is limitless. Nisan, the entire month of Nisan, it's the month of miracles. It's the month when God is channeling his infinite light. It's what we had discussed earlier, the powerful lights, the powerful lights. The month of Iyar, the second month, the Rebbe says, is the month of vessels. It's the month of containers. It's the month of us. Now that we were stunned and shocked by those lights, now it's our job to start assimilating it, to start internalizing it, to start taking it in bit by bit. That's why the month of Iyar is the month of the counting of the Omer. Every day, we know that the counting of Omer is an exercise of self-development, purification. We're polishing our vessels. Omer is also a measure of barley, which is considered food for the animal. And Sfiras Omer means polishing the barley, polishing that measure of barley, which really means polishing our animalistic self. Coming down into our everyday, it's not just about escaping into the lights, but taking stock of who am I as a human being down here? What aspects of me are still not ready for that light? How can I reorganize? How can I fix? How can I tweak? How can I, you know, fix the aspects of me and prepare myself for this enormous godliness and this enormous light. So the month of Iyar is the vessels. The month of Tishrei is the lights. And our job over here is to unify Nisan and Iyar. It's these 2 months, first month and the second month. And our job is the unification of Nisan and Iyar, to carry the Nisan over into Iyar. Now, how do you unify these two things? How do you unify the lights and the vessels? The Rebbe says, through the power of Teferis. That's why in the Omer, the second day of the month of Iyar, which is Bezia, which in Chabad is a very significant day. It's the birthday of the fourth Chabad Rebbe, Reb Shmuel. But it's known to be the day of Teferis, Shebet Teferis, because in Sfirat HaOmer, every single day, it corresponds to one of the attributes. So in Teferis itself, which is the attribute of harmony, it's harmony of harmony. So the Rebbe says, so that's the power to transition from Nisan into Iyar and to be able to capture those intense redemptive energies and bring them into the vessels is through the power of synthesizing, which is the power of Teferis, which unifies this in the human spirit, the desire for escape, desire for lifting ourselves beyond ourselves, and yet the humility to be able to take it back down and in turn, and bring it down into rectified behavior. Now, the Rebbe says, so when you have this combo, there's no more exile. Because the whole exile comes only as a result of the vessels not contained. when the vessels are not contained and put into the right containers, then what happens? There is the yanika sachitzonim. The external forces get a hold of this energy. We discussed in earlier classes that you see in the world these powerful movements that are being driven by enormous energy, and where are they getting it from? Because we haven't yet channeled those energies into the proper vessels. They're leaking out to the wrong side, to the other side. But it has the character of this of these powerful lights of Mashiach, like we discussed with the transgenderism that we discussed yesterday, and so on and so forth. Now let's take this further. So again, the second month is all about taking the first month and integrating it into the second month. Now we move further. What's the name of the month? The Rebbe says, in the Torah, it's called the second month. In the more common language, in the sages, we refer to it as the month of Iyar. Iyar is spelled Aleph Yud Yud Resh, which says in certain Sefarim, what does it say? 82, in writings of the Holy Ari, that it is the acronym for the words Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Aleph is Avram. The two Yuds are Yitzchak and Yaakov. And the Resh is Rachel. What does that mean? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Rachel. So what is that? Those are the names of the patriarchs, all three patriarchs, and one mother. What is the idea behind it? It's exactly this idea. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, masculine energy is energy, is lights. Masculinity is associated with energy. Feminine is the vessels, the containers. And from all the mothers, the main container is Rachel, Rachel. Because what mystically she's associated with the attribute of Malchus more than all the others. She's the Malchus of the Malchus element. She's the kingship element, the Malchus element, the realm of words, containers, and vessels. The month of Iyar is the synthesis between the male and the female, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, being funneled and contained in the vessels. So it's exactly this point, taking the phenomenal energies and being able to settle them down into containers. That's what the quality of the month is. Now, to add to that, the Rebbe says, how is that accomplished? One of the ways, so we said earlier through Torah study, but there's another element which helps draw down these vessels. The Rebbe says it's hinted to in the name Rachel, Rachel. Sorry, in the character, by adding Rachel into the month of Iyar. What do we know about Rachel, about Rachel? She's our crying mother. She's our sobbing, weeping mother. As the verse describes, Kol Berama Nishma, there's a voice that Rachel cries for her children. Rachel Mevaka, where is this verse? In Jeremiah, in Yirmiyahu, that Rachel is crying for her children. Now the simple meaning is Rachel cries because her children, when they go to exile, she's weeping for the exiles of her children, the exiles of the Jewish people. But the Zohar gives a deeper interpretation. The verse says, Rachel Mevaka, Rachel is crying, Albanel and the children, ki einenu. Simply it means because they are not home. But if that's the case, the Zohar says, it should have said, ki einam, not einenu. Einenu means he is not here. Einam means they are not there. Since it's saying that she's crying on her children, and the children are they, so it should say, ki einam, they are not there, in the plural. Why does it say, ki einenu, that he is not here? So the Zohar says that the real meaning is that Rachel, who is the Shekhinah, is the feminine element of the divine, she's crying ki einenu because her husband is not home. She goes along with her children in exile, but her husband, which is the masculine, went away. Where did it go? So we discussed earlier in the discourse. Remember we said, as a result of the new flashing lights of the infinite that are teasing, that are way up there, the masculine aspects of the divine rise up and become subsumed in the infinite. They run up because they're teased by the light. It's like a husband who has an opportunity to make a lot of money, and he runs to that business place far over the oceans, and he forgets he has a home. So it's like God runs away to these new lights, and that's what we're talking about. These are these transcendental chaotic lights that are coming, and the regular ordinary godliness of creation that has been from the time of creation until the exile began was here and present, now disappeared. So the world is in chaos. The world is in darkness. So Rachel is crying. She is weeping and saying, how long are you going to stay away? I know you got a lot of business to do there. But, and if you have business, so bring the merchandise home with you. Go fetch it and bring it. So the Rebbe says that represents all of our work. Rachel is the work of Israel. Israel is called Rachel. It's all the Jewish people called Rachel. It's our work throughout exile in yearning. We yearn and we cry and our weeping. It's not in vain our weeping, our cries for Mashiach. Because all of this eventually, God hears those cries. The Abish, their God, hears those cries. And if the verse says, for Rachel's sake, the verse says, I will do it. Vishavu banim legvulam, the children will return to their land. What does it mean, the children will return? The children will return means Israel will come out of exile, but the husband will also come. And when he will come with the goods. So it's the unification, it's the drawing down all of that into the containers and into the vessels. And all of that is hinted to in the name Iyar, the month of Iyar. Okay, we're not done yet. Now let's take a look at the specific. So we said, we looked at the parsha. We looked at the Pirkei Avos, the ethics of the fathers. We looked at the month that we're in. They're all following the same pattern. That we're dealing with the situation with our intense energies where we need to unify them in the vessel. Finally, what do we come to? We come to the count of the Omer. Now, the day the Rebbe was talking was the sixth day of the month of Iyar, which in the Omer count is 3 weeks, is the 27th day of the Omer, 3 weeks into the Omer. Now, the corresponding, it's the last day of the third week, and we're beginning, the next day we begin counting the fourth week. So we know that in the Omer, each week corresponds to another one of the divine emotions, attributes. So the first week is Chesed, the second week is Gevura, and the third week is Teferis. But in each one has all the, there are 7 days in each week. So each one, we do a rectification of the particular emotion of that day. So the first day is Chesed, Shebe Chesed, and then the Chesed element of Gevura, kindness of severity, and then severe, beauty of, kindness of kindness, and then kindness, and then severity of kindness, and then beauty of kindness, and then victory of kindness, and then glory of kindness, and then foundation of kindness, and then kingship of kindness. Then we move into the next week, right? So that's how it works. The day the Rebbe was talking was Malchus, means kingship, Shebet Teferes, the kingship of beauty. So the Rebbe says, okay, actually this crystallizes what we need to do more than anything else. The fact that today, the day that we're talking, it's Malchus Shebet by divine providence, because this is going to give us clarification of what exactly the avodah needs to be. What is the work that needs to be? He says, first let me preface and tell you, the Rebbe says, that you should know that we should know that In the 7 week program of Sfiras HaOmer, it includes every type of divine service possible, because we know it's referring to the wholesome rectification of a person's soul. We do it every year. It's the time after we left Egypt until we receive the Torah. We need to fix everything up inside of us. So we're given a 7 week strict regimen of intense spiritual work, so that we can rectify all the aspects. So therefore, in these 7 weeks, everything is included. And each sphera, every day, is a different nuance and has different energy and a different type of service. Now, when we say it's all-inclusive, the 7 weeks it's the full package, the full gamut, the full spectrum. It's everything that it takes to fix ourselves and everything it takes to fix the cosmos. Why? We say it in the special Tefillah and the special prayer right after Sfiras HaOmer. We speak about the rectification of our own souls, and then we mention also that through this we should draw down through the counting of the Omer and its ramifications, we should draw down a spiritual light into all the worlds. Yishpa Sheferav b'chol ha'olamos, a new influx of light should come into all worlds. So, which means that and by doing this daily, we bring down to the cosmos everything it needs for full rectification. So, but in particularly, and then the Rebbe adds, I don't want to skip anything, so just adds briefly, particularly that year, which which doesn't apply this year, but it was in that year when the weekly, the Sfiras HaOmer count was consistent with the week, with the weekdays. So Sunday, which is generally Chesed, was also the Chesed in the Sfiras HaOmer count. And Shabbos, which is kingship, Malchus, also happened to be that was Malchus. Every week, the Shabbos was always the Malchus. In other words, there was a consistency between the Omer count and the calendar in its most perfect state. This year, we don't have that particular quality, because it depends on when Passover falls out. Passover falls out on a Saturday. On Sunday, you end up with that perfect count. If Pesach falls out in the middle of the week, it's different like this year. Anyway, so that year it's even perfect to the ultimate perfection. Okay. Well, now let's analyze what is this Malchut kingship of Teferis. So here this is very powerful. And the Rebbe says like this: Malchus means kingship. Now we all have kingship in our soul, and there is kingship in the world, and which means leadership, sovereignty, the ability to influence others, all these things. Yet, and there's many legitimate governments and many legitimate leaders throughout all of history, different types of leaders. But Malchus, as we apply it to redemption, because now we're talking about redemption, so we're talking about not just kingship, we're talking about Mashiach's kingship. Talking about the ultimate king, the final, the grand finale of all kings, the ultimate of leadership, which is Mashiach. But when we speak about kingship, what does kingship mean? Kingship indicates enormously powerful. In other words, the king always gets his way. Now, obviously, you hope you have a just and moral king. But there's no such a thing that the king wanted something to happen and it didn't see it through. The king, meaning you can't interfere with the will of the king. If there's anybody who wants something, you know, here you have the zoning laws, they don't let him do this. Here you have problems with this one. Here the neighbors are making a fuss. Here there's a lawsuit that comes out again. Here there is this and here there is that. Now, you know, in the United States, we don't have real kingship. So even a president gets blocked. So many things he tries to do. And the courts block him, and this one blocks him. So you can have interference. The Congress can block him, or this one can block him, or other king or a different country can get in the way. The concept of the real meaning of kingship is that when you want something, you see it through. So much so that this is, especially if someone is a king over the whole world, is the ultimate king. So there's no one can stop him. Now, so in the words of the sages want to emphasize this idea. They say, Amar Malka Akartura. If the king says you to uproot a mountain, they uproot a mountain. The king says we got to go there and there's a mountain in the way, so lift up the mountain and move it away. So spiritually, that means Mashiach's power. You know, we look for, the Rebbe told us the time of redemption has arrived. 30 years later, we don't see it fully yet manifest. Some people might be in state thinking foolishly. Sometimes we become foolish, even if we can be very religious and very observant. We can even be Hasidim of the Rebbe and still become foolish. As foolish, from our foolish side, we might start getting questions and even sometimes vocalize those questions. Say the Rebbe tried, he wanted to bring the Giyul, the Mashiach was supposed to come, but it didn't happen. It's a failed situation. So the Rebbe is saying, no. And why? Because there was too much opposition. I don't know. God, you know. There was too much whatever, pushback, and the world wasn't ready, and God didn't kick in to the way we were wanted, God forbid, and it didn't happen. The Rebbe says, no. Kingship means that when the king wants something, it's going to happen. Kingship of Mashiach is the kingship which is going to see it through no matter what. And he says on two levels. Number one, he's so, the king is powerful, so everything that's in his way gets uprooted. No one can stop Mashiach. But on a much deeper level, here's the beautiful thought the Rebbe says, much deeper level. The real idea of a king is that he is the pulsating energy of his entire kingdom. He is the life force. We don't know what a king is. It's a subject onto its own. I don't want to get into it right now, but he is the life force of the entire kingdom, of the entire people. They live with the energy of their king. They live for their king. The king gives them the oomph to wake up in the morning. The king gives them their dreams. He gives them their aspirations. He leads them. I'm talking about a real, benevolent, kind, true, obviously infinitely wise king. So he is the bloodstream of the people and of everything in the country. If that's the case, if he's the life of the entire kingdom, everything in the kingdom, it's impossible that there should be something that's standing against his will, because no one would go against him because he is their life. It's only possible for a moment that they should mistake and not realize that he is their life. So in that case, they can be temporarily, externally, superficially stand against the king. It's like people in the world standing against God. Can you stand against God? The very fact that they're standing against God is because God enabled them to stand against God. And God is their life force. And if so, it's really only external. It's only superficial. And by us revealing the king and the kingship inside of them themselves and their relationship, and that will melt as well. So the concept of Malchus, the Rebbe says. So here's the Rebbe sitting in 7-7. I think if we really catch what's going on over here. The Rebbe sitting in 7-7, he said, there's a kingship over here that is ready to spread. It's God's kingship that needs to take over the entire world. And I know you're scratching your heads and you're all wondering how, what, where, and when. The obstacles are so great. People are cynical. There is going to be questions. People are going to accuse this, and some are going to say cult, and some are going to say this. But the Rebbe says, I am coming to you as a divine emissary. And I'm speaking over here from divine kingship. And therefore, no one and nothing in the world will get in the way, and we're unstoppable. That's the idea. Chevra, the Rebbe is saying, guys, we're unstoppable. We're the life force even of those that are standing in our way, and therefore they're going to flip. Everything is going to flip in our way. But how in the world is this kingship going to come forth? The Malchut itself, here, this is so important. How is this Malchus, how is this kingship going to literally actualize itself in the literal sense? Since there is Malchut as it is part of kindness. So that would mean, there is Malchus as it is part of severity. There is Malchus as it is part of beauty. There is Malchus as it is part of victory. How are we going to do this? Malchus of kindness, maybe we're going to give candies to everybody. We're going to give everybody $1 million. We're going to go around whatever it takes. We're going to be kind to everybody, and everybody will buy into the king. We'll pay everybody off. We'll do kind. And we'll reveal the king's power. He doesn't say that. I'm just reading into this concept. Severity. We're going to have Mashiach. He's going to take off his, the Mashiach is going to open his eyes, give one stern, strict look at the world, and every enemy, every dark being in the world is going to collapse and fall down right in front of Mashiach. He's going to shake in terror. Because Mashiach will reveal the divine fear over the world. And as a result of that, everybody will melt and dread in front of Mashiach. Mashiach can take over the world that way. Through victory, through glory. The Rebbe says, no. The way we're going to do it, and the way Mashiach wants it done, hear this. The way Mashiach wants it done is he wants it to be Malchus of Tiferes. Malchus of beauty. What does that mean? He wants it to come through harmony and synthesis. That means he wants it to come in a way where the narrow vessels are going to be stretched and open to receive the wild, infinite energy of Mashiach. And how is that? Through Torah. Torah is the Tiferes. Mashiach is asking that we go out and teach the world about Mashiach. For number one, for ourselves, how should we connect to Mashiach, to this enormous? Mashiach is here already. The king is here already. The energy is here in the world already. It has all potency to now move everywhere, take over the entire world. But what's the chosen way? What is it, as we spoke earlier? It should be through Tiferes, through Torah study. Which means we will illuminate, we'll teach the world so much about Mashiach. And two things, we'll teach the word about the era of Mashiach, so people will want the redemption. They'll appreciate it, they'll understand it, and we'll teach the world about Mashiach himself and about his quality. Who will, and if there is a person who is on that level, We will show the world who that person is, and suddenly everybody will fall in love with him. And everybody will embrace him, with everybody, 8 billion people on the planet will want to be on his team, will want to be part of his, will accept him as a king. It has to be through Tiferes, not through a different way. He says, now once we'll do it through Tiferes, it will include, I'm not going to get into this, it will include all the other aspects of kingship in it as well. But the primary emphasis is Malchus Shebet Tiferes. This is what he says in chapter 11. In chapter 12, he specifies it and explains it more specifically. He says, the explanation of the matter, of this straight path to bring about the revelation of Mashiach and the coming of Mashiach through the Malchut element of Tiferes regarding actuality. It means we will use Tiferes to bring forth the king. The Malchut, the kingship, will go through Tiferes. Ubagdama, I have to read this inside. This is part I'm going to read literally from inside. Since Mashiach is about to come, but even though he's about to come, he has not yet come, meaning fully been revealed for the entire world. Therefore, it is required one last push. We have to do one last campaign or something. We got to do something to break the leprosy from its, as we spoke earlier, from the skin level, from the most external level, we got to break through. So what is the work? What's the last work that every person has got to do to bring Mashiach? The actions that need to be done, not through pure kingship, just pure kingship, which means declaring the king. We run around and forcefully, powerfully declare the king. In Yanesh HaMelech HaMashiach Atzma, which is what Mashiach is, he is a king. So not to take Mashiach in his pure, unclothed state, which means revealing the purity of kingship itself, but rather we should dress it in Tiferes. Elai Yedei Malchus Shebet Tiferes. We should convey it through the Tiferes element. Kloimar, Tiferes again means the synthesis, the beauty. Kloimar, in Yanesh HaMashiach, the content of Mashiach, which is Malchus. Reveal Mashiach. Use Torah to reveal Mashiach. Torah is Tiferes. Mashiach is Malchus. Create the synthesis and the blend of Torah and Mashiach. Like we said earlier, that through Torah we draw the Melech, Mashiach's power, into Rebbe, into kingship. Ubepashtis, Tiferes. Tiferes means Limudat Torah, studying Torah. Umalchus Shebet Tiferes. Tiferes in general means to study Torah. Malchus Shebet Tiferes means is the Rebbe's incredible insight. Ulimud haTorah b'inyanoi Melech haMashiach. We need to study Torah regarding the King Mashiach. Ubinyanei Agula, and we need to learn the matters of redemption. In Torah itself, we have to learn the subject of Mashiach. Through that, we will funnel the kingship of Mashiach, will funnel it through the Torah, and as a result of that, it won't be forced upon the world. It won't be bought in. It won't experience some kind of a bribery. It will be true and real, and all of existence will appreciate and understand in a very intrinsic, deep way their connection to Mashiach, and open up their constricted vessels to receive this powerful idea, this powerful life. And then he goes through and he says, where should you study it? Well, he says, start with scripture, start with Chumash, and then read the prophets, where in the prophecies, Maimonides says that most of all the books of the prophets are filled with prophecies regarding Mashiach. Then read Talmud, Torah Shebal Peh, read Gemara, which is Talmud, and particularly he says, Tractate Sanhedrin, and Tractate Masechta Sota, then read the Midrash, then study also the inner part of the Torah, but the most important part is to study the inner element of Torah, beginning with the book of Zohar, which it says specifically that with this book of Zohar, the Zohar itself states that God, or from above, I think it was Elijah the prophet who told Rav Shimon bar Yochai, or some other revelation from above who told Rav Shimon bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar, that with your book, the book of Zohar, Yafkim and Galusa Berachman, we're going to go out from exile with mercy. So we should study the esoteric concepts that it says regarding Mashiach. And even more specifically, to study the Hasidic discourses that talk about Mashiach. Because through the proliferation of these teachings, we bring Mashiach and read it, right? And from all the Chabad Rabbeim, and now the Rebbe makes it even more specifically, that we should learn the Torah of the leader of our generation. Now, usually whenever the Rebbe speaks about the leader of the generation, he's at least externally referring to his father-in-law. So the Rebbe never speaks of himself as a leader of the generation. This is one of the unique places where the Rebbe makes reference, the leader of the generation, and he's basically saying about himself. It's clear. Why? Because he tells you which books to learn. He doesn't say his father-in-law's books. He says his own volumes, his own books. He says, read it in Memarim v'Lakutei Sichas, to study it in Lakutei Sichas, which are the Rebbe's volumes, the discourses of the leader of the generation. And by doing that, and he adds, this is also so telling, says by reading particularly the books of the leader of this generation, this is also going to serve as an introduction and a preparation to the Torah that we're going to hear from Mashiach himself. Why? Why the learning of the sichas of our Rebbe, of this generation, not only will it prepare you generally for Mashiach, but it's going to prepare you to study Torah from Mashiach's mouth itself. It's perhaps because it's the same author, it's the same person, the same speaker. This is the teachings when Mashiach was still in exile, when he was still in the state of leprosy, and still in the city. And when there will be a revelation, he will teach it in a way. So when you're learning and you get the style, and you get the understanding, like we're doing right now, we're preparing ourselves for the new Torah that's going to be revealed from Mashiach after he's fully revealed in the world. And this will all be fulfillment of what Rambam says in the days of Mashiach, the world will be flooded with knowledge. And the Rebbe says, Val shal poyel basi, I am coming down in chapter 13, he says, I'm coming down with a very practical advice. And definitely you'll spread it everywhere and you'll publicize it everywhere. In order that we should affect the revelation and the coming of Mashiach instantly, every single Jew in the world, every single person, men, and when we say men, we mean whether business people or scholars who study all the day, women, children. This is for women, this is for children, this is for everybody. Everybody, in accordance to their capacity, needs to add in the study of Torah, and particularly in the study of Mashiach and Geula. The Rebbe makes a very special suggestion that we should do it with 10 people together. It shouldn't be a private study. It should be a public study where people are learning all together as a group, in addition to the fact that it's then the Shekhinah dwells amongst us. So it has an extra power, because whenever there's a quorum of 10 people, it has a divine presence, extra divine presence, a more powerful divine presence. But there's another thing, he says, because when you're learning with a bunch of people together, they bounce their energies off each other, and then the learning gets done with much more joy and much more energy and excitement, and people really are able to, and it creates an openness, which creates a stronger longing and a desire for Mashiach. So it seems very strongly that it's the longing and the desire that is the most powerful in drawing the redemption. But the learning of all of us together is going to add to that spice as well. So not only are we learning, and learning is enabling these wild ideas to come down into containers and into vessels, but also that we should do it. And in addition to that, he says, it would be really good. And he says, and in the footnote, he says an interesting thing. Even people who like to study quietly for themselves, because when they're with other people, they don't have the clarity of mind, should study for themselves. But at the same time, from time to time, they should join a class. And in addition to that, he says, by each one of these classes, we should all give charity. They should put a charity box there. Everybody should give charity. Why? Because charity brings the redemption. So when you're connecting it also to an act of charity, you're going to have extra potency and extra power. Let it be the will, the Rebbe concludes. I'm concluding the talk. Let it be the will that just the acceptance, taking upon ourselves this acceptance. And by the way, the reason I took upon myself to give these three extra classes a week, this week it happened already before, is because of this instruction. I want these teachings, which the Rebbe taught, to be available for every person speaking English, to be able to hear these teachings, to know what has been said. And when you learn it, when you understand it, and then when it also helps, it will facilitate, it has a spiritual quality, but also on the simple level. Because when you learn this and you understand it and you realize that when people say, people believe Rebbe's Mashiach and so on and so forth, it's just kooks. When you study and you learn it, you say, hey, hold it. You know, it's exactly what the Rebbe is talking about. There are ideas that are so intense that you look at that when, if you don't grab them, they can shatter your vessels, which means you look at, it sounds crazy. But it's very much these crazy ideas that need to be facilitated, need to be understood, so we can anchor them down and fully digest them. And let it be the will that just accepting this, just taking this upon ourselves, should quicken and hasten the coming, the ultimate objective of it all, which is the revelation and the coming of Mashiach in a literal sense, and it should be immediately, literally literal. And in simple words, the next paragraph, very powerful, that on this Shabbos, again, the Rebbe is talking Shabbos afternoon, and on this Shabbos, Parshas Tazria V'Yolda Zachar, where it speaks about the woman giving birth, and she's giving birth to a boy, which we discussed at the beginning of the class, that the boy is referring to the masculine soul of Mashiach, the male, the ultimate male boy, Mashiach, who is going to bring the redemption to the world. And also we're reading, this should be the second Torah portion. This should be the Torah of the Metzora, which Metzora is referring to Mashiach, B'yom Tarasei, on the day when he comes out, when he's purified, when his affliction has ended. So therefore, even before we get to read the Minchas prayer, the Mincha Torah portion, the next Torah portion, and before we read Ethics of the Fathers, we should already have, in a revealed, tangible way, the birth Redeemer Mashiach, the Chivri, as he is in the day of his purification, that we merit to hear a powerful announcement that should reverberate in all of the universe and all of the spiritual universes and in the entire order of existence, the Rebbe says. There should be this powerful announcement that should run through or send its vibrations through all of existence, where everybody will thunder and point out with their fingers and they'll say, Hine Zeh. Here, behold, it's a verse in Song of Song where people say, Hine Zeh Melech HaMashiach Bo. Here, King Mashiach is coming. And the Rebbe adds in parentheses, to the point where you can point it with your finger, which means we're not talking about some abstract idea. Along with that, and here is my father-in-law, the Rebbe says, the previous Rebbe, the leader of our generation. See, the father-in-law, what do you mean he's here? He passed away. He says, no. Kivin Shekitzuv Adam Shechniyav, since the resurrection is going to happen immediately for the great tzaddikim, they're going to be resurrected immediately at the time when the Mashiach's revelation. The tzaddikim come in with Chiyah Miyad, and the righteous will get up instantly. Together with the previous Rebbe will be all of our masters and teachers, Chod HaBeseinu Nesiyenu, all the Chabad Rabbi, but not only them, the Chol Tzadikim, and all the righteous, Unisiyah Yisrael, and all the leaders of the Jewish people, Moshe and Aaron, all the way up to Moses, to Moshe and Aaron, Imam with them. And then together with all of the Jewish people, with our youth, with our elder, with our young, with our boys and our girls, Hashem, everybody will be gathered from all the corners of the world, from Egypt, from Syria, from the islands, quoting verses. We'll be coming with the clouds of the heaven, and we will come to our holy land. We will come to Jerusalem, the holy city. We will come to the holy temple, which will not be just for the Jewish people. It will be a place of prayer for all the nations. We will eventually arrive to the Holy of Holies. Like it says in the parsha we're reading by Mincha, that Aaron should come to the Holy of Holies. the Kohen Gadol that will go into Yom Kippur to the Holy of Holies, and when Mashiach will come, not only Aaron will go into the Holy of Holies, but every single Jew will be on a level of the high priest, and not only on Yom Kippur, but at every moment we'll all be able to go into the Holy of Holies. Wow, what a powerful statement. The main thing he says, that all of this happens in the literal, it's all nice that there's talk, the Rebbe says, but all this has to happen in the literal sense. It has to happen lower than 10 cubits, which means all the way down here on the ground, lower than 10 handbreadths, so that we can actually make the blessing to thank and to bless God for the birth and the revelation of Mashiach. Shechiyanu v'kimanu v'giyanu l'zman hazeh. We should be able to make the great Shechiyanu, which is a blessing which we make when we experience something really wonderful, and we should be able to make this great blessing. When the Rebbe spoke these words, it was really unbelievable. When the Rebbe says it should reverberate throughout the entire world, the announcement, here is Mashiach. At that time, there was a chassid, his name was David Nachshon. Remember, this all came after the Rebbe had instructed that what else can he do to bring Mashiach? It's up to us. Many chassidim understood that the one thing the Rebbe can't do is he can't appoint himself as king. Kingship must come from the people. So there was a huge campaign to actually sign signatures, and they wrote up, and the rabbi signed it. It was something out of, but people were terrified to do it. Because until that time, as we once gave a whole class, the Rebbe was very much, the Rebbe did not welcome when he was signaled out that he would be the Mashiach. But after this talk, and in general, in that whole season, people were feeling that the mood is changing and that the time has arrived. So especially after this talk, so on that Shabbos, this chassid had gone up and announced the announcement that chassidim are now doing a new campaign, and announced, and it was the first time it was said loudly in front of the Rebbe, the words, Yechi Adeinenu, long live our master, our king, forever and ever. So when the Rebbe was saying, let it be revealed, let the announcement be heard, in all the Seder Shalshos, in all worlds and in all places, that Hine Zem Melech HaMashiach. So it was pretty clear to what he was referring to. The main thing is, as we said, let us study, let us learn, let us study more, let us learn, let us saturate ourselves, let us drown our minds, our hearts, and our entire being in this enormous light. And when we will understand it and be able to articulate it, we'll be able to share it with others, and we'll be able to bring down this enormous blessing so that everybody should be able to connect to it, and let us see it happen now, right now. Thank you for joining.